I was definitely the kid that used to have an attendance list for my stuffed animals, which for many filled probably about quarter, maybe more like a third of my bed. I always considered myself a creative, and stretching my brain to learn these applications like Airtable and Make. And there's a real sense of accomplishment when I fix or create a new automation or find a way to incorporate a new idea that one of my coworkers comes to me with.
Hello and welcome to the Gross Profit Podcast. I am your host, James Kennedy. I'm the CEO and co-founder at ProcurementExpress.com. We take the hassle out of managing your company's purchasing with magical features, but we're not here to talk about that today. Instead, for a while now, I have been obsessed with processes within my own business. Back when I was a baby business nerd, in my early 20s, I read a book called The E-Myth, and I dreamt of one day having a perfect business that ran on processes like clockwork that you didn't need to be around for and helped you achieve amazing things consistently and deliver awesome value to customers without having to worry about it. And I've been looking for someone to really get into what it takes to roll out processes for a while. And when I came across Hannah Lee Robles' LinkedIn title as Queen of Process, I knew I had found my woman. Now, not only is Hannah the queen of process, she's also works at Skyline Art, where she's a customer at Procurement Express. So I thought it was the perfect person to bring on. So Hannah, thank you very much for coming on the podcast. You're very welcome. Maybe you could just give us a bit of a background before we get started.
So I've always immersed myself and loved the design world. I graduated from UF with a bachelor's in architecture. And then after that, I moved to Texas from Florida to help my uncle with his roofing company, because he always said that architects can't build roofs. So if I continued in architecture, he wanted to make sure I knew how to build a good roof. Then I worked in furniture sales until I started working at Skyline, and I've been here for almost a decade now.
So tell me, what is Skyline in particular? What's their niche? Or niche, as we say over here.
We are custom artwork. We strive to make a space amazing with our artwork. We want to try to make an impact in people's daily lives by making a space beautiful with artwork, not just have, you know, plain white walls. Our specialty is in healthcare, but we do also do corporate, some corporate and residential. And we also like to use evidence-based design, which is basically the research behind how artwork makes a person feel. So since we work mostly in healthcare, things like nature-based photography is proven to reduce stress for patients. So a lot of our healthcare projects have mostly nature. And then you also have to take into consideration, you know, how will it affect a child if it's a pediatric space? Will an image possibly evoke a hopeful feeling from a patient who possibly received bad news? You know, you don't want something with splashing abstract red all over that's chaotic. You want something calm and to take them to a place of peace.
So tell me about this evidence-based design. Like, where's the evidence for what types of, you know, art influence people one way or the other?
They do studies and research on different artwork in certain spaces and then put that research out there. So there's a license, an EDAC certification. It's a test that you take, and then you have to do CEOs every year. With that, you know, you take classes with new research that they come out based on whether it's behavioral health space or certain spaces that they've done research on people's reactions.
So you spent tens or hundreds of millions building your hospital. The last mile is to make sure that it felt comfortable for the patients, using art to do that. So this is the crossover from the artistic world into the sort of right-brained architectural world. So did you start off on the artistic side or on the process side when you joined Skyline?
I started off on the creative side. For the first 7 or so years, working on projects, including the 2 largest projects in the company's history. And I kind of always had a couple different hats on, where I, you know, started the training manual and did some data organization. As we started to grow, my bosses you know, kind of said, you're really good at organizing and we really need somebody to get our processes in order. So I started to kind of wean away from doing project work to start really focusing on operations and process side.
So on the quote unquote creative side, were you responsible for like knowing all the artwork that was out there or meeting artists or sourcing them or negotiation? Like, what does that really mean when you're a creative consultant on that side?
Yes. So we do everything from meeting with the designer and getting the floor plans to space planning the art and meeting with artists. Sometimes, a lot of times we use local artists. And so meeting with those artists and bidding the client's budget and really trying to get their vision. So it's a lot of space planning and working with artists and working with the clients to do budget.
So it sounds like there were actual commission pieces of work as well as off-the-shelf pieces.
Oh, yes. We did large sculptures and hanging sculptures, outdoor sculptures, not just framed artwork on the wall, but everything.
Okay, so it sounds like you were the kind of glue between the artists and the commercial world there, fixing the budget and getting those to gel together. Someone who used to have a job working with artists, I know those two worlds aren't always directly overlapped, a little bit of gelling to be done in the middle, let's call it that way.
Yeah.
What would you say is the one piece of advice you give to someone who's very, you know, creative in terms of their soul and what they do when it comes to working with the commercial world? Like, what's the one tip you would have to be able to commercialize your work?
To be open to feedback. You know, sometimes when we would propose a commissioned artwork to a client, we have images of their previous work. And, you know, we say we think this artist would look great here. These are images of their previous work. We can, you know, customize it to your theme or, you know, your brand colors, that sort of thing. And the artists that we have the most success with are the ones that are really open to sending us progress images as they're working and open and to feedback of, you know, we need some more blue in there, or this corner of the space isn't working, sort of thing. So I think just open to feedback, because it's not always, how do I say this? It's not a criticism, it's the desire of the client, and we need to meet that.
Very good. I can see you're being very diplomatic there. I don't have to be as diplomatic because, you know, I don't work directly with artists, but I know from my own experience, I used to work with voiceovers and in ad land a little bit, advertising. And there used to be a blue duck strategy. I don't know if you've ever heard of this, but like the idea is you would do a final layout for the client and whatever it was. And then you just stick a blue duck in the corner and then they would look at it and they would go, yeah, it looks great. But you know what? Just one piece of feedback. Could you take the blue duck out? And you go, oh, what a brilliant idea. Yeah, let me take that out. And they take it out and then everyone feels heard and the project goes through. So like an obvious defect. I'm not suggesting anyone do that, but I know it has been done in the past. So you've hinted a little bit at your penchant for data. You mentioned the word already. Think back to your early years. What was the first sign that you weren't all just creativity and you had a tendency towards bringing order to chaos?
I was definitely the kid that used to have an attendance list for my stuffed animals, which for many filled probably about a quarter, maybe more like a third of my bed and a binder with all of the attendance list. But I wasn't always that organized with everything. Early on, my mom realized, you know, I'm a little different. And she really held my hand and guided me to using lists and agendas to the real world and not just my play world. So applying that to all aspects of my life and turning that into kind of my superpower.
My daughter has teddies all over her bed and there's definitely no order to it. Maybe you can come around and teach her how to keep it organized. So it's a superpower. So I am on board with this, I have to say. There's a really great book called The Checklist Manifesto, which sounds super, uber boring, but I believe me, it changed my life. So I mentioned the E-Myth already, but also the Checklist Manifesto really went through why, for example, you know, airline pilots have a checklist every time they want to take off. Even surgeons have checklists every time they do a surgery. There's some great data in that book about the difference that it really makes, even if you're doing something that you might have done hundreds of times before. When was the first time you realized how powerful this superpower you had was? Like, when did you start to realize, wow, this checklists aren't so bad after all.
I think most recently in the last year was when I realized how I can really leverage it to help a company. So my biggest project in the last year has been redesigning our Airtable base. And the information that we had in it was great, but every department was its own entity and not speaking to each other. So important fields like the install date was repeated in each of the different bases. And a lot of times the consultant is only on their base, so they wouldn't update that date in the other bases. You know, they have so many projects, they would forget to update it in all of the bases, and everything was a lot of repetitiveness. And so it caused information inconsistencies, which obviously caused problems in many sides of the business. And so we started rebuilding Airtable to be one huge base that had all of the departments all together and create interfaces and implementing in the automations and coming up with the possible scenarios so all the departments communicated with each other effectively, and coming up with the steps of laying it out was a challenge.
So I'm not familiar with Airtable. In my mind, it's some sort of online Google Sheet type software. What is Airtable? What makes it different to, say, Google Sheets or, I don't know?
It is like a database. You can integrate other programs into it with third-party apps. And it is like a database. So we have, you know, a list of all of our projects and we have statuses on it. So someone can go in and see the stages. And then for our production team, that's where we have our list of what needs to be in production. And for our graphics team, that's where they have a list of the custom designs that they need to work on. So it's a database pretty much.
And is this something that anyone can pick up, or to get the most out of it, is it good to work with a consultant to sort of customize it?
It depends on how complicated you want it. So we originally, the different departments were kind of building their own bases, which is part of what the problem was. We really wanted to have it be a snapshot and integrate some of the other programs like QuickBooks and Procurement Express. So in those terms, it was much better to work with a consultant because it does get a little more complicated working with third-party apps to bring that data in.
And when you ask people to start using like these checklists, do you get any pushback, or what sort of resistance do you get to rolling out a new process?
Oh, absolutely. Every time. Nobody likes to be told that they're not doing something right, you know?
Right.
But I do really try to get feedback from the teams when coming up with the process or changing the current process. So, you know, having a meeting and asking who does what way and what do we think the best, most efficient way is. And even with that, there's still pushback because there are the ones that aren't doing it that way and they have to change what they're doing. But to have projects, the project process flow as close to seamlessly, you have to standardize those things.
And in order to persuade or cajole or make people comply, what's your strategy for getting someone who's giving you pushback to seeing the light? What's your strategy for getting them on board?
I think with the revamp of Airtable that we've done, I haven't gotten too much pushback because the old way was very repetitive. So it was very much like, we are doing things this way so that it's not repetitive. And in order for all of this data to feed into each other, and for there, you know, to not be errors or an automation to not go through, it needs to be done this way or we'll have problems and you may not get, you know, your artwork done by install date. So verifying that, you know, we're not doing it just to make you follow a certain way because I want it this way. It is because it's the way that this program works the best and the outcome is what we need. That makes sense. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Well, I'm smiling because to a certain extent it is because you want it done that way, right? I worked with a consultant many years ago, Ted from Utah. I love you, Ted. He taught me something really amazing, which we were doing a process. It was a partner program we were running. And he had like a step, like 100 things we had to do to roll out our partner process. And, you know, we would meet him every week and we were supposed to do the next 5 and the next 10 steps. And then we would meet him and we would, of course, have skipped step 4, 8, and 7, you know, and he just look at the list and he go, oh, I noticed you haven't done 4, 8, and 7. I was like, yeah, you know, we got busy. I said, oh, didn't we agree we were going to do that? I said, yeah, we did, Ted. Yeah. Okay. Shall we do it? I said, okay, I'll see you next week. And he was staying very calm and I didn't get into an argument. It was just like, Yeah, we agreed on this. This was going to be the process, and it's either done or not. And then after a while, we gave up trying to skip the steps because we knew Ted was just going to ask us and say, hey, well, looks like there's a step that hasn't been done here, you know? And it was great. He had great style with it because it wasn't him arguing with us, trying to get us to like do something we didn't want to do. It was like, well, this is the process. We all agreed on this process. And I try and channel Ted a little bit now as well, because it's a much nicer way to get everyone on the same page rather than trying to say, is it done yet? Or checking up on people. It's like the checklist is there. We can all see it, creates great clarity. And then it's just a question of whether it's done or not. And we do it. So I'm getting goosebumps talking about it. I love this stuff. So tell me, what was your, oh my God, we have to fix this moment when it came to process?
There were quite a few, but the first and biggest thing when I first started at Skyline Art was that everything was written down by hand. And it worked when the company was very small, but we definitely needed to integrate technology more as we grew, because rewriting a plan sheet that had six floors, you know, and imagine maybe 50 to 100 pieces every floor. And if we had to write the preliminary and then the revision and maybe a couple revisions, you know, I had stacks this big of these 11 by 17 plan sheets. And don't even get me started on full set floor plans with pasted pictures on them. And we have a ton of empty filing cabinets from how much paperwork we constantly had. So if you do need a filing cabinet, if you need one, we have a lot.
So you don't use them anymore. Is that it? They're all gone?
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like it was pretty chaotic. And so it was, because then there was a lot of arguments, I guess, over which version of the plan we're on. Was that it?
No, it's just things change as the client wants something else. And since everything was written by hand, you either had to erase. And if you erased a lot or had to totally renumber it, a lot of times it was just easier to rewrite it.
So tell me, what are you most passionate about when it comes to your work?
In the early years, it was install day. So even sometimes when it felt like there was a million revisions, install day was so rewarding to have people react with the art, whether that's, you know, a nurse walking by saying, oh, I'm so glad that I get to look at something pretty every day, or whether it was a patient, even sometimes the artist. One of my favorites was this huge project that I worked on for a cancer center, and the artist did this hanging sculpture in this multi-level lobby space. And so when a patient was getting infusions on one of the upper levels, there was a glass wall that they could look out to this beautiful hanging sculpture that would spin. And the artist was HIV positive. So him having his artwork in the hospital, you know, hoping to put a smile on a patient's face as they're getting a not very pleasant, you know, medical procedure done, it can be very touching. But recently, it's been problem solving and really delving into solving problems and realizing that my brain is a lot more analytical than I thought it was, because I always considered myself a creative, and stretching my brain to learn these applications like Airtable and Make. And there's a real sense of accomplishment when I fix or create a new automation or find a way to incorporate a new idea that one of my coworkers comes to me with, and having our CEO, you know, wrangle my brain of how to put together data. It's really satisfying, and it's made me realize that I've definitely discovering how to leverage those superpowers. And
I'm a geek, a programmer by training, and I feel like it's actually creative, you know, creating those processes, or like it is its own, you're creating something out of nothing, right? Even though you can't see it sometimes, it's still actually, there was nothing, there was chaos, and then suddenly something has changed. It's ephemeral maybe, and can't see it on the wall. But do you get that same kick out of drawing sometimes as creating the process? Is that a stretch?
I do. Yeah. I think I've definitely realized that, you know, the creative and analytical sides of my brain mesh very well. And I get a lot of satisfaction doing both, picking out artwork and now doing a lot of problem solving and a lot more data driven work.
When was the moment you were like, haha, I can see all this coming together and it's worthwhile?
We started the beginning of the year with, October to December, I really pushed to have at least the main base done, even though we hadn't brought in the information from the other programs yet. And so at the beginning of the year, having people start to use those things, some of our forms were even still on the server. So bringing that all into just one space and having people just be able to easily do it and not have to remember where's this form, where's that one, was really gratifying of, you know, that what I was doing with this Airtable was working.
So you mentioned Procurement Express. So I have to ask, like, what have you been using Procurement Express for and how has it helped the team?
So it's the foundation of our ability to forecast cash. At the beginning of the year, we had the consultant and production and digital artistry kind of all set up to get started with the revamp of Airtable. And then we started bringing in things from QuickBooks. And that's where Procurement Express came in, because all of our purchase orders go to QuickBooks. So we were bringing in purchase orders, quotes, invoices, so you can open up a project and see every quote, every vendor bill, every purchase order that's been made, whether it's paid or not. But a problem that we were having that our new CEO really wanted visibility of was that there's no bill until we receive an invoice from a vendor. So some of our projects, we start really far out. You know, we start at the beginning where they're breaking ground. And so having the cash forecast of, you know, this, we have gotten some money. Is there anybody we need to pay right now? Some artists take a year or so to create their art and we need to pay them right away. And having the purchase orders come in, even before we get a bill, we're able to actually look and see we're going to owe this much. We're getting this much in. We're going to owe this much. This much is ours to keep. And that's where Procurement Express has really been such an intelligent tool and really critical to the data and cash forecasting for our CEO and owner.
That's very interesting. So it's the length of the project, because they're so long, everyone maybe has moved on to the next project by the time the bill comes in, and maybe even the staff have turned over in certain circumstances. You're trying to remember, you know, what was that all about, et cetera, and the accruals will be ready for you. Okay, great. Well, I said the podcast wasn't about Procurement Express, so I'd love to talk for another half an hour about that, but I'll resist the temptation. Instead, I'll go on to our penultimate question here, which is a traditional question, which is I like to ask people who is their business hero. So I don't know if you thought about who your business hero is and why.
I'll tell you who my current hero is. And it's Scott Rose from Scott World, because he's just so smart and he's been an epic problem solver. The last nearly year, my main focus has been Airtable, and he's our Airtable consultant that's been helping me build our incredible database and bringing in data from all of these different programs. And if I get a request from our CEO for some data needed, and at first he says it's impossible, and you know, we've been working on something totally different the last few meetings, and he comes up some way of how to build it, and it seems to me like magic, but I've been learning a lot from him and he's inspired me, and I've started actually taking classes to learn make the third party program on my own and have him kind of teach me during our meetings, so that I'm learning as we're building this.
Well, you know, when I ask that question, I often get like Elon Musk, Richard Branson, Mark Benioff, whatever. And now I'm very, very proud to add Scott Rose to the annals of our business heroes here at Gross Profit Podcast. I love that answer, because I think it's the people around us which are really actually heroes. You know what I mean? The people we work with. And it's great to be able to call out someone who's really good. Scott, I see his website here, scottworld.com. We'll link that up for anyone who's interested in getting some help, bringing process to the chaos. So you've been a star. This has been a lot of fun talking about process with you. If anyone wants to find out more about Skyline Art, or where could they reach out to you if they want to connect or find out more about what you're doing?
Our website is skylineart.com, and you can find me on LinkedIn at Hannah Robles.
Thanks, Hannah. And thank you for listening. If you're still listening, if you have made it to this point in the podcast, your special bonus prize is the ability to be able to sign up for our newsletter at procurementexpress.com/newsletter. You can get more business tips from experts also working in the trenches, just like you. Thank you very much for listening. And thank you, Hannah, for coming along today and sharing your wisdom.
Thank you so much for having me.